coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special bi-location edition of Curious Realm. I am officially in Nashville, Tennessee right now, prepping a show, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait for it. I'm very excited to be a part of it. But as always, we bring you new content. We bring you new conversations, not replay, not old stuff, things like that. In the second part of our conversations tonight, we will be joined by our good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News. We will be talking about the recent UFO UAP hearing that happened in Congress. We will be breaking down the now famed video of the Hellfire missile hitting the quote UFO UAP in that, and what that actually is. We'll be getting into some of that. And in the first segment, I am more than happy to welcome our good friend, Michael J.S. Carter. Michael J.S. Carter is not only a reverend in the world, but also a TV personality, shows like Ancient Aliens, all kinds of things. The truth is out there. He's been on all kinds of programs. He is an experiencer. He is a healer. Welcome back to the show, Michael J.S. Carter. How are you, my friend?
Brother, it's always a pleasure, and it's good to see you. And here we are, man, going into the last quarter of the year.
Right.
And it's always exciting.
Isn't it?
And so, yeah, I love this time of year for many reasons, as you know.
Same.
But here we are.
Well, and
here we are.
You know, it's really interesting because there really is an odd history of things that happen during this time of year as things move into a new year. And one of them that is coming up rapidly that we've been talking about on social media on the Curious Realm group for the longest time is 3-Eye Atlas. The now infamous comet 3-Eye Atlas, that is coming in named because, it's found by the Atlas satellite array. And the Atlas satellite array is made specifically to find interstellar objects, specifically near Earth interstellar objects, things that may impact Earth, that kind of stuff. So it's titled 3-Eye because it's the third interstellar object to be found by the Atlas system. And it's interesting. As you know, I'm a huge avid photographer of the night sky. I've got numerous images of comets, things like that. I wanted to have this conversation with you today, Reverend, because A, you and I have differing opinions on the object itself. However, we have 100% the same opinion on the absolute hype following the wake of it and what's happening on social media and the conversation that's being generated from it and the use of said conversation by the disclosure community and government. I think this is a hugely important conversation to have because it's one of those that really peels apart both sides of such a conversation, but also exposes that seedy underbelly that's always there as a means of control.
Well said. Well said. And just for the audience to know,
please.
I'm not trying to walk anything back. No. I don't know if it's a meteor or a ship. I tend to think that it may be something not human made. I tend to think that only because, and this may be flimsy, but I remember with the Roswell reading about that. And this is what I was reading, you know, that there was a ship.
Sure.
And then we went back to the more scientific view. Here's what we're really seeing. So I could be wrong.
Well, and
that's okay.
Yeah, no, and that's the beautiful thing is that we should all have an opinion. We should all have an informed opinion, and we should all be looking for data that changes our mind or at least comes as new data into the data set. And this is something that I have held since the beginning of this, since Oumuamua, even the first.
Now, interesting. Isn't that interesting? I didn't think Oumuamua was a ship.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah,
me neither.
I didn't think that was a ship.
And here's the thing, though, is that
Avi Loeb. And I'm not sure this one is either.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that Avi Loeb isn't either. And that's the point that I brought up
great
with Darcy.
Thinking a lot.
That's what I brought up with Darcy Weir the other day is that, you know, the media takes something.
Ooh,
and buddy, they take the smallest bit of worm on the hook and they will expand and expound on it. What he said was this object is very strange. You know, we haven't observed a lot of these. No, we haven't. It's literally the third one. Third interstellar object that we have seen in such a way. So we don't know a lot, period, about any of it. Now, what he said was there's a small chance just because of the source of where this seems to come from, trajectory-wise, things like that, that it's coming from up around Sagittarius, which is where the WOW signal came from. Hey, there's like a 2-3% chance that it might be an alien ship.
Right.
You know,
I remember him saying that, and I remember people taking it and running with it.
And that's all you saw on the news. And then you start seeing all the images. And here's the images. I'll bring them up right now. This is just a Google search for 3i Atlas images. And this is off my graphics machine, folks. So it's not like I'm on this machine searching day in, day out. I search here about once or twice a week. So if you're not searching for this stuff, this is a really good example of what will show up when you just do a general search. Now, this image right here, even though it says NASA confirms 3i Atlas, utterly fake image. That second image that you see from FFESP, that is an AI-generated image. The one on the left from SciNews, that's an actual image of a comet. That's the actual image of the comet. But all these others from space and everything else, even though it's from a reputable source like space.com, it's an AI-generated image.
So when
you start marrying that on social media with scientific fact, with like, yes, you know, there's more nickel than usual, with yes, it's putting off more CO2 and more water than usual,
that's what I was glued into, and that's what I heard.
Yeah.
Now, last week, I just came across a YouTube, I didn't listen to all of it, a YouTube video with Avi Low refuting, having a little tete-a-tete with Russ Cohart, the Australian brother, journalist.
Yeah, Newsmax.
And apparently, Avi was saying, I never said that definitively that this was a craft.
Exactly. Like from the horse's mouth, his job as a scientist and the job of science is to hyperbolically hypothesize.
Yes.
Literally, that is the job of to fearlessly hypothesize.
Yes.
And then go find data and poke an experiment and see if the hypothesis floats or sinks.
That's science.
You know?
And so I mean, there's a part of me.
So I don't blame science here. I blame the media and us.
I, you know, there's a part of me that wishes it was a craft. That's probably what you're hearing.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I want nothing more than for it to be a craft.
I do, as we were talking before, I do, my antenna are up about the control and the fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's, as I was speculating with you before, this may be a way, craft or not, and it's leaning that it's not a craft, but it may be a way, another way of seeing how the populace will react if and when disclosure is imminent.
Well, and that's just it. That's
what I'm thinking. And also the religious ramifications, because no politician, no theologian, male or female as yet, has dealt with what are the ramifications for this for our religious traditions.
Yeah.
And this is a way, because you have the old Native American prophecies that this may be a sign of purification with the Hopi, you know, talking about the next phase, the next cycle of evolution. You have the Christianity again talking about this is the second coming or this is something demonic. So all those things start coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can gauge, we can use this as a metric in the future of how people are going to react without someone coming up and saying, you know what, let's talk about this. This has some ramifications on religion. So there's literature that refers to these beings as having a hand in our creation. No one has to get up and put their reputation and pensions and everything on the line by saying it. They can just let it come up organically because we'll say it for them.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. That's what we've gotten into before, Reverend, is the way that these things impact the communities, the way that these things drive a dialogue and drive a divisive dialogue within communities. And yes, that is a perfect means of control. A society that is arguing amongst itself is not paying attention to what either hand is doing, number one.
Exactly.
Like you said before the show, I'm not prone to trust alphabet agencies, mainly because anytime you call one of them before Congress, they lie. Straight out.
That's what they're paid to do.
Absolutely.
A lot.
Absolutely. And that's just it. You know, that was one of the points that we brought up whenever the last article came out from New York Times from Leslie Keene, who was, of course, one of the people who drove the opening of the Big D disclosure conversation with black money, black budgets, and or dark money, black budgets, and UFOs. The latest one was how the intelligence communities for decades have used tropes that are out there and conversations that are out there in the UFO UAP community as cover for black operations. Because we're doing their work for them. Why would they have a cover story officer or somebody who has to come up with a narrative when we're out here generating it on social media for them?
Yeah, we're doing it for them. And it's a dirty business. It's a dirty business. Yeah. And so here we have the perfect opportunity. We were talking again before the show, and I mentioned Chaim Ashad, the retired Brigadier General of Israel's space program, who back in, I think it was 2000, was it 2020 or 2018, who came out there we are, who talks about this quite openly. No one has come up and said he needs to be locked up and medicated. No rebuttals. But he did say that he said a few things. He said that there is a Galactic Federation. He said that there's also a station on the moon.
Yep.
He said also that this federation, there are some ETs who are in favor of disclosure and some that are not. I found that to be very, very curious. He also said that there's some ETs who, surprisingly, they're arguing against disclosure. They're not saying because we're too warlike, which that's obvious, or we're not as evolved, but we don't yet have the technology for interstellar travel. And once we do, we may be eligible to be a part of this Galactic Federation, which means I imagine, Chris, that there's a people sitting around a table talking about Project Earth.
Yeah.
One of my questions is, well, who's representing us? because we don't know who's representing the Earth, everyday people. However, the other point is that we're not in charge. If one of these ET civilizations said, you know what, we're tired of this, we're tired of it, we're going to disclose. Either you guys disclose or we're going to do it. Which brings up another conversation. Who's really in charge of disclosure? We're thinking it's our generals and our intellectuals and they may not have anything to do with it because it has to come from a level above them.
Well, and that's just it. These things are so compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. And once again, it's kind of like I was just talking with somebody on a show, with Sev Talk about remote viewing and the fact that, yes, the government put money into remote viewing, but they'll always say that, like, it wasn't efficacious, so we stopped funding it. No, no, no. It was efficacious. They funded it for 20 years almost. So you don't fund a program for 20 years that you ain't getting nothing out of.
Exactly.
And when they say it wasn't efficacious, so we stopped funding it, what that allows for is for their contractors thereof, your Blackwaters, things like that, to use remote viewers as a source of, quote, human gathered intelligence.
Yes.
And
yes.
Do it under black budget projects, where now they can fully say, we don't do that.
Yeah.
But the intelligence that comes from contractors thereof does use that.
Does do it. And especially, and you're not going to give that up.
Yeah.
When you know other countries are doing it too.
That's right.
Because it's all about the competitive factor in this.
Well, and you.
And tech and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if I know China's doing it and Russia's doing it and Israel's doing it and Egypt's doing it, I'm not going to all of a sudden say, well, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
that's
just
not
so
what
ethical.
We do.
No, we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
But I know that my neighbors are doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, it's a dirty business. It's a lot of subterfuge and smoke and mirrors. And, you know, I've come to this conclusion after my 68 summers so far on planet Earth is that we will never fully get full transparency.
No, no.
Not just our government, but any government.
Nope. And, you know, it's an interesting concept to think about, especially with, there was something that was very interesting brought up by George Knapp during the recent hearing.
During the hearings. Yeah, I saw him. Though.
And that was the idea that he was like, I'm sure a lot of these companies that have this stuff in escrow and just like locked behind doors for the last 50 years, I'm sure that they're looking for an off ramp. Research wise. Because you can only like myopically look at something for so long. Eventually you have to have the input from other people in research communities.
That's true.
Not just for application science, but for materials science.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So he's like, when you've been digging into this and having the same sample for 50 years and the same thing to work with for 50 years, you get very myopic with that. And I'm sure that they're looking for a collaborative reach out at this point to be able to take things to the next level, to be able to use things in a different way.
Well, they already have it and we don't know about it, but you're right.
But even then, like, they've got to have an off ramp. They've got to have a way to monetize it. They've got to have it's got to be released onto a shelf or into the military in one way, shape, or form to be able to recoup the billions of dollars that has been spent in researching it.
Yeah.
It can't just stay hidden forever.
Yeah. Wasn't that touched on a little bit in the day after Roswell?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
In the book.
Yep. And that's just I was going to say it's a dialogue of fear. You know, it's something that we talk about with our friend Daniel Harari regularly whenever we're talking about how the media sees things, how the media uses things, how the media does things. It's interesting to see I haven't seen a lot of excitement about it being an alien craft within the community. I've seen a lot of fear. Much like we talked about with the drone swarms whenever they were happening, how quickly that turned into creature beings of light, beings of darkness coming in and becoming a religious thread through to that.
Because eventually, no, point taken. Eventually, again, we know the Vatican's been talking about this, but mainstream, you know, church going people who serve churches, people like me, Nara dog is barking. And I understand why. Who wants to come out there and have that dialogue? Because the first question that comes up is, are you saying there's no God? What are you saying? But by having these celestial events, and you go from, oh, this may be a ship, to no, now it's really not a ship. And we can tell you that it's not a ship.
Sure.
You're raising the questions without raising the questions. You're letting us raise the questions.
Well, and you also get to metric how many people stay aboard that train.
Yes.
Even though you have now once again provided that off ramp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though you've pulled the jacks on the story and had the person who said it come out and say, like, you grossly misinterpreted and, like, I hyperbolically hypothesized, you hyperbolicized by hyperbolic hypothesis.
Understood. Yes.
Like, you added more arch to the rainbow there than what was naturally there.
There you go. But the conversation is eventually going to have to be had, because now it's still at the tech level. It's still at the tech, and it's tech and national security. But as you and I both know, we know that this is really about that, but it's about consciousness. It's about, where are we going as a species? And how can we go to that next level of evolution, knowing that we're not alone, that some of these beings, obviously not all, because because you have more better technology doesn't mean you have a spiritual depth, but many of these beings talk about consciousness, the spirituality that they have, and how this has affected biblical texts, of the monotheistic religions, prophecies of Aboriginal peoples. That's the conversation that needs to be had, and will probably, it's the elephant in the room.
Well, and you know, it's a conversation that we have regularly with people like Keith Seeland, author of the Humaniverse Guide, things like that, is are we ready? I'm gonna pop up old Moon Dancer there. Just for the listeners out there who are not aware, Moon Dancer is the name of the ape from 2001 who discovers the weapon, discovers the use of the bone. And that's kind of where we're at. Like you were saying, if there are alien races out there that are part of a galactic brotherhood, they are waiting for us to become the ones that can travel amongst the stars the same way they can. Right now, we know how to use the technology of that for this. We know how to use it the same way Moon Dancer does. There's 1,000 ways you can use a hammer to build industry and society, or you can use it as a weapon. You can use nuclear energy, the cracking of the atom, things like that, for amazing things, science, all kinds of stuff. And we have, and we do, but we also use it as a weapon. Just an energy source.
We're very primitive in that sense. So, and it goes back when the metaphor, the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
That's right.
So I think that when we start seeing more celestial events, which we will.
Yep.
It pushes the conversation forward without someone else coming to do it. What does this mean? What does this mean? Is this part of the Hopi prophecy of purification? Is it part of maybe this whole tribulation period that Christianity says that if we're not going into it now, we will be?
Yeah.
Or is it just that we are so we, you know, our ancestors did this. We look to the heavens for answers.
Absolutely.
And we're still doing it.
Yep.
And I don't think we'll ever stop, but hopefully we'll be looking at it from less jaundiced eyes.
Well, yeah. Yeah, precisely. And it's one of those we right now, especially with not just 3-Eye Atlas in the sky. I just popped up a second ago from Vice. Two comets.
I love when you do that.
Streak across so the important. Sky in October. There are three comets actively in our sky right now. One of them is hidden behind the sun, which is 3-Eye Atlas. The other two are right underneath the Big Dipper coming up. You'll actively be able to see two comets in the sky at the same time, something that you rarely see. So when you start looking at these alignments, when you start looking at this stuff, like, yes, these are things that ancient cultures would have seen as like the doom of man.
Or at least some type of mess. Maybe the birth.
The new Messiah is born.
Another avatar.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And they look to the heavens. And so I think that that's exciting.
Same. Same.
I also think that we need to temper it with science and reason.
That's right. That's right. And that's just it. Because otherwise, you end up with things like the end time prophecy that just happened, where like people were like on social media, literally looking for somebody to like take care of their pet during the rapture. And it's like, you understand what you're telling that person, right? When you're like, hey, can you take care of my dog after I'm raptured? It's like, what are you saying about me?
Right? What am I going to sit here and go through this whole mess?
I get left behind. Thanks, buddy. You know?
Yeah. Thanks, but no thanks. But it also just still goes to show you how it is easy it is for bad science and bad religion.
Absolutely.
To sway people.
Yeah.
And it's very dangerous.
It is. It is.
It's very dangerous.
And it's one of those, like, we have to temper that. Like, you have to temper that from the pulpit.
Yes.
Whenever you talk about these things.
Definitely. And also have to temper it in me, in the sense of, I really would be pleased if this was some type of craft.
Surely.
Okay?
Surely.
To push the conversation where I feel it needs to go. But that's one person. But it's probably not a craft. I mean, you know, let's be honest.
However,
it's getting people talking.
That's it.
And it's bringing religion into the picture, because we have to, we can't let, did you see when Jacques Vallée was saying, probably for different reasons, that I think you did because you posted it, that he's concerned that journalists, researchers are not, you know, using everyday folk like me and you, or the farmer, or what have you. We're just getting all our information about UAPs
from the military.
Now, I said that months ago, and I don't have the clearances that he has or whatever, but it's concerning because if they're the only people that you're going to, they control the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, hey, don't forget, back in April, he said could trigger complex religious and security courts. Religious came up first.
Yeah.
And that's
and it
like,
will.
Like I said,
but we're not ready to talk about it yet.
But
if you're only going to let the military talk about it.
And
you know what it reminded me of, real quick?
It reminded me
of when I was the chaplain and I was doing my chaplaincy training. And, you know, I do energy work, with, you know, the Reiki and that kind of thing, which is enhanced because of my contact experiences. Mm-hmm. And I remember being annoyed, ticked off, because of the closed-mindedness of religion. And thank you. First of all, because, ladies and gentlemen, this man can do websites. This is my website. And thank you for putting the new pictures on. They don't all have to go on, but now I'm bald. So I just didn't want everybody, you know, that's not him. That guy's had dreadlocks. Anyway, but what it reminded me of, how I felt when you had doctors qualified, Larry Dossey, Vietnam vet, medic in Vietnam. He and his wife was a nurse, writing books like Healing Words, Prayer is Good Medicine, loved it. Have them over here, but no one went to clergy to say, how are y'all feeling as chaplains or whatever? Because the unspoken message was, you guys are too conservative. You know, we'd rather go to Larry Dalsey to tell us that prayer is good medicine, not to someone who's seminary trained. We'd rather go to Larry Dalsey and his wife about healing words. And I'm like, guys, we're right here too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all of us are not closed-minded. All of us are not going to give you some religious dogma and tell you you're a sinner. And we, no.
Right.
There are other people. I'm an energy healer. I'd be more than happy to talk to you. Well, now we have people who I'm not going to talk to a religious person. I'm not going to talk to someone who's maybe had an encounter. I'm going to go to the military.
Yeah.
I find that troubling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that troubling.
Same here.
And I think, you know, Jacques Vallée, it's not the military triggering the questions. The questions are always there. They're just not being, they're not being addressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to hear a politician tell me about verses in the Bible. I love Tim Burkett.
It's the last person I want to tell me anything religious.
He came out a couple months ago and said that he believed that there were Bible stories that were related to UFOs. He used Ezekiel and Elijah. We all know that. Enoch. Yep. But why is he the one?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's probably got a clearance to say that. You just can't go and say that. But why is he the one talking about this? I guess he's a man of faith. I get it.
Sure.
But why not go to someone who's trained in biblical languages? Or if not in biblical languages, you're trained in, as a theologian. I'm an experiencer and a reverend. I'm a clergy person. Why aren't we hearing more from those communities?
Yeah.
Why do we have to have the government telling us this? I think that's very concerning.
Well, and you know, on the flip side of that coin, you've also got the other side of things when it comes to religion and experience, and the fact of saying that there is no alien. The only thing that's alien is demonic. And just digging that rabbit hole deeper and deeper every time, which doesn't allow for conversation.
Because Brother Burchett is only going to see things through his Southern evangelical.
That's right.
Roots,
that's right.
Which is fine. But let's have another voice that says, look, go back and look at Sitchin's work.
Well,
go back and look at Paul Wallace. Go back and read some of my work. Go back and read Dr. Barry Downing, where we're not steeping it in us versus them, that these are the possibilities. That's all I'm saying. But I think we will get there. It's just that the powers that be are not ready for it now. But things like this comet, notice that I'm calling it a comet. are giving us an opening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And about what does that mean?
Well, and I think more than anything, I'll pop back up the Sun article. And I know folks, Sun, but, when you start looking at these, like here's an image right now of NASA in panic, and a picture of Dr. Michio Kaku and things like that. And it's like, that is not the case.
And it's also it's not honest.
Yeah. No, it's a horrible lie.
It's not ethical what you're doing.
It's not ethical whatsoever.
I'm looking at, I lost it. Anyway, I was looking at, just Googling about our topic, and they said there's no religious connotation to it, and I get it, but they were talking about, they did bring in Hopi prophecies. They did bring in Matthew. They did bring in Revelations. So we could broaden. They brought in some, I just lost it. They brought in some verses from the Quran. So, so we could get a more sweeping view of what these celestial events can and possibly mean.
That's right. What they have meant to previous cultures, what they have meant to previous mm-hmm. religious implication, and how those things reverberate through our society. And once again, I think that is why this conversation is hugely important, is because it really helps splay open and peel back the way in which we have a conversation. And are we even able to have the conversation across the aisle, you know,
about our origins, about who we are really.
Well, and even that religious side of it, once again, the idea of that,
about our
that
origins. Fearful, I think that's a religious question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And a very existential religious question. And exactly. As is the question of, is Three Eye Atlas a ship, a comet, or is it a harbinger of a biblical message or something else of things to come with the other two comets in the sky? Because that's what the wise men followed. They followed a star in the sky.
That's right. That's right. And so we need to have that conversation. We need to be open to the barriers. We don't have to all agree with it, but we need to know and to say, because this is where our religions are coming from.
Yeah.
Extraterrestrial life, the conversation about that, about the things that we see in the sky. Are they harbingers of things past, things to come? Can one believe in God, if I may use that word, and still believe in extraterrestrials? These are the questions that are just below the surface that we're not, our leaders are not, they're having it among themselves, but they're not ready for us to have them yet. And so but we can't wait for them.
Yeah.
We can't wait for them.
Well, and
we got to be talking.
And
we are.
That's an interesting point, because I don't think that they would necessarily wait for us either.
No, they're not. But see, but see, it's the secret. See, you're sick as your secrets. So you're having the conversation, but you're not sharing it with us. That's the lack of transparency.
Yeah.
Because you know there's power there.
Oh, yeah.
There's also when we find out that you guys have been talking about this for eons and not sharing it, the secret knowledge that secret societies had about, you know, just how the human growth potential. Because once we realize the human growth potential, you can no longer control us.
Yeah.
You know, that's you look at the Tower of Babel story. That's what that's about. My God, if they build this ship, or I don't think it was an apartment building they were building.
Yeah.
There'll be nothing that they're not violating codes for housing, because we're told it's a tower or whatever. It was probably some type of technology. But be that, that's neither here nor there. These gods say, whoa, we got to roll this back. These people are getting, they're going to be like us.
Yeah.
So what can we do to screw it up? Well, the Bible says we go down and mess up the language. In the Mayan Popol Vuh, there was a mist that was sprayed on humanity to keep us, to dumb us down. So these stories are there, but we're not told about them. We're not told about them. No one's interpreting them for us. But it's a story about power, who stays in power. These beings are multiplying. We've gone past them mining for gold for us now. They're way past that. They're multiplying. They're building technology. What do we do? Well, the Mayans say a mist was sprayed on us. The Bible says, the Lord says, let's go down and muddy up their languages. But the bottom line of the stories are, the potential that they have, we need to stifle it, because there'll be nothing that they won't be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. If they attain this height,
there's nothing. And so if these right now leaders are probably saying, if they stop thinking about color and race and who's sleeping with who and whatever, there'll be nothing.
yeah.
that they won't be able to do. So we need to keep the game going.
Well, and that's just it. You know, the idea of, once again, that perfect means of control, whether you're mm-hmm. talking the fear-based side of religion, not the beautiful side of religion, okay? Right. Not the right. positive side, things like that.
Yes.
The fear-based side of it.
We got to keep that going.
That causes people religiously to point finger at each other, mm-hmm. their fellow man, and forget their big red words. You know, it becomes a dialogue driver at that point.
Yes.
And much like I've said about, like, the recent work in the last few years of people like Stephen Greer, who have made very yeah. divisive statements about experiencers in the community and yeah. their experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, that's pure ego.
Is it? Well,
and, you know, you can't even, I see it so clearly.
Sure.
I see a man who came out, started out doing good work, insightful, creative, innovative work. And I see that other voices were being heard, and I see someone that's struggling to stay relevant.
Well, and it's also the fact of, once again, like I think with Lou Elizondo, I think the best of intentions were there. I think that they have, much like agencies tend to do, much like they do in the media, things like that, they surround them with other people who then feed them bad information, and they become mm-hmm. such a trusted and vetted source that they become an unquestionable source mm-hmm. to them. And mm-hmm. when they say this is what happened, they just hook, line, and sinker go with it. You know, yeah. much like and, the vetted and, images yeah, no, that I, came I hear to you. Lou Elizondo that were used in his thing. It's like, at what point do you stop vetting the images that you get from a source and just trust them implicitly? Which right. is strange for somebody from the world of intelligentsia, unless yeah. you're helping put forth the veil of intelligentsia.
Right. You know? And lesson learned, you know.
Yeah.
I think that we still have to have the spirit of discernment.
Yeah.
But especially in religion, but especially in politics and government.
Yep.
And, you know, I say we've all at some times gotten got.
Yeah,
but
I've gotten God.
Yeah. We all get God, and I don't think that it you don't wipe out a person's work because of
no.
you know something like that. But I think that in the world of more misinformation, disinformation, we have to, and with AI, it's we have to be more vigilant about what we accept as truth.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's a good thing. It puts the onus back on us, as opposed to, because it's easier to be led. I don't have to think this is what I was told. And we see that in politics. We see it in religion. And now maybe it's time, part of growing up, part of childhood's end, if I can use that phrase.
Yeah.
Is that we need to be able to research on our own and to trust our own guidance.
Yeah. That true spirit of discernment and the idea yeah. of, you know, getting to the depth of that. And once yeah. again, the idea that people have been talking about end times for a long time. And that's one of the things that you have to remember, folks, is that there have been numerous dates given, even within my lifetime.
No question.
Of the end. We just had the whole rapture situation, mm-hmm. like we were talking about. And what
are
you
told that we've been told that this would, you know, if you look at the teachings of Jesus, we've been told mm-hmm. that there'll be people who will be, you know, and so, yeah. And that's when we have to have our own spirit of discernment, because many will be led astray.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. You know, the idea of stories like this leading people astray, stuff like that. And I mean, here's a article from Daily Mail that was just brought out a couple days ago. America's most renowned prophet makes startling prediction about alien mothership, you know, and it's, yeah, it's one of those, like, there are people who, and I'm not going to say blind faith follow somebody, You know, their faith is founded in the way that any faith is founded. All right, folks. But when you are willing to accept somebody's word as such gospel.
No question. And it's been going on with the Bible stories about it that you can read about it in the Upanishads. It's been going on. And that's the thing. We are easy prey because we give our power away because it's easier not to have to think. It's easier to have someone tell you this is right. This is wrong. Yeah. And it's just life would be easier if you don't have no accountability. Hey, Michael, you told me blah, blah, blah. You were wrong. So now the blowback's on me. And I think that as we go forward individually and collectively, especially around UAPs, especially around the stuff that's happening in the heavens, we're going to have to be able to trust ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to learn to do that. I'm teaching a course in miracle class at my church. It was requested. And what I'm trying to get people to see is that, yes, well, the course talks about that, but be able to trust your spirit, to trust your guidance, if you will. Yeah. And not just because I said it or because someone else said it. And because there's power in that, because otherwise I could start my own cult.
Absolutely.
I could have these people sitting at my feet and I'm giving them these pearls of wisdom that I think they are. And that's what happens.
Yep.
But to empower people in spirituality and religion is you want them to get to rely on themselves,
that's
the God
right.
within them, if you will.
Well,
but it's easier not to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but the final night's lesson with my seniors every year, whenever I taught CCE and religious studies to juniors and seniors in high school and junior high kids and adults. My final class, if I taught adults or seniors, was go look it up. I may have been lying to you all year. The only way you find out is to go open the catechism and actually go find a man with a collar and ask him what the church teaching is. Aside from that, go look it up. Keep questioning. Yeah. Question your faith and the root of your faith every day.
Yeah.
Challenge your faith every day. If you don't, you've got a problem.
No, it's right. What is it? You know, the unexamined life is not worth living. The unexamined faith is not worth having.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cherish your doubts.
Yeah.
And because you'll come by a stronger faith that you earned it.
That's right.
Not your grandmother was a Christian or Muslim or whatever. Not your granddaddy, not your mom and dad. It becomes your faith because you experienced it.
Yeah.
And that's something you'll hold on to.
Well, and that's just it. When you're firm in that, you allow yourself to take in other data. You allow yourself to allow in challenging data.
Yeah.
Because you're not afraid of a parry and thrust conversation in that kind of way.
Yeah.
You're able to fearlessly have a conversation. You're able to fearlessly confront what you believe with new data given, you know.
Yeah, the Dalai Lama said several years ago that if science disproved Buddhism, Buddhist philosophy, because Buddhism is not a religion, it's a philosophy.
Right.
He said, the Dalai Lama said, then I would have to change my approach.
Yeah.
You won't hear many priests or rabbis say that.
Yeah.
You know, I have lots of dialogue with people on this side of the pond and on the other side of the pond, and they're mostly of the Christian faith, the Jewish faith, and they have said to me, Michael, if what you're saying is true, if you're telling me that UFOs exist, UAPs exist, and that they're in the Bible, I will have to stop believing. I will have to give up my faith. And I say, why?
Yeah.
The very people that we're talking about who were wrestling in the Bible, they didn't give up their faith. They just lived in a world where it was commonly known that they walked among gods and goddesses that we would call ETs. They didn't give up their faith. Why would you have to do that? But they cannot see it.
Yeah.
They cannot let that new information in.
Yeah. And that's just it, you know, and even the Pope said in like 2005, 2006 that, you know, if aliens exist, like that does not dismiss the salvific act.
And Pope Francis said it.
Yeah. So the idea, and here's the Vatican astronomers saying, you know, if alien exists, they may not need redemption.
Father Jose Funes, a Jesuit.
So
this is all the conversation starter because of this comment.
Yeah.
And that's the conversation we need to have.
Well, exactly. And we need to be able to, once again, I think it really peels back the way in which these communities, quote, have conversations. If you want to call it a conversation, I wouldn't call most of it an actual reach across the aisle, open-hearted conversation. People get pretty nasty about it.
They do.
You know,
they do. We're trying to have a dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those that doesn't behoove capital R research in any way, shape, or form. And it doesn't really further us down the road. It actually stymies all conversation. Like you are actively putting down layers of mortar and brick for the wall of the conversation.
But remember, there are people who benefit when we are arguing with each other.
That's right. That's right. And there
are people, keep the status quo, let them argue with each other.
Yep. That's just it. It is the distraction and where you're putting your energy. And if you're putting your energy into that 24/7, then you don't have energy to pay attention to the rest. You don't have energy to pay attention to what the other hands are doing.
No. You don't have energy to live.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's just it as well. You know, it's something that we talk about on the show all the time is the ways in which our energy is given away and that we give it away, and the studies that have been done on the actual damage to individuals from negative news cycles, from all of these things that have only increased since COVID, because as our connectivity increases, these things increase. So we have to be willing to have these conversations in this kind of way where like our conversation started out tonight. We, like I said, we had different approaches as to what 3i Atlas is, different hopes and aspirations as to what it is, all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean that we can't get to the root of this.
I think it is a comment now, but.
Well, the data seems to point there.
I know I wanted
there.
It to be something but else, but one day it will be something else.
It will be.
And then we'll have to have another conversation.
Well, and that's just it. You know,
I'm talking about collectively.
Absolutely. And as was just shown all of a few days ago, it was really funny. Let me see if I can find that. But like we just had a major near miss astrologically.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
We had a major asteroid just breeze right past us.
Yeah.
That because all telescopes are focused on 3i Atlas and like the Atlas system, the Atlas system is made to look out for near Earth impacts and NEOs, near Earth objects. And yeah, it flew just past the orbit of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a real close call.
It was close
with a very, very large object.
Yeah.
So,
and we've had these, the Earth has had this before.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that, yeah, you know, it's just happening when we're on the planet.
Yeah.
But this is part of being, this has happened before. Floods, earthquakes, you know, this is what happens when you're on the planet. Tsunamis. Yeah.
Yeah. Here it is. Sneaky asteroid zoom past Antarctica closer than a satellite. And astronomers didn't catch it till hours later. So I was wrong, like within near Earth orbit range. And because attentions are elsewhere, we totally missed it. We whiffed that. Yeah. We found out after it passed us. So these things happen all the time. The question is, what's being focused on by the media? What's being used to kick people up into a fervor? And into that state that is controllable, you know, because as they've said numerous times, like we can have all these collision systems we want, that's going to happen regularly. Where it's like, whoa, oh, we no just question. Missed that.
It's the new normal, and people have to be reminded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That this is part of being on the planet.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. And it's just the fact of this is just the beginning. It's just mm-hmm. the beginning. It's not going to be the end of it. This is just the third object. Mm-hmm. And the third object, when was Oumuamua? Like 2022, 23, yeah. something like that. So within 3-4 years of that system being online.
Not counting objects that we just were never told about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, things like this that it was used to detect for, but this is just the third interstellar object, mm-hmm. third confirmed interstellar object. I'm sure that there are other things that were false positives, what have you.
Sure.
But once again, it's just the beginning. It's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to have more interstellar objects come through. We knew that they happened. We just never tracked them or were able to until now. So guaranteed there have been other things. It's an interesting study in humanity right now to see what the recoil is societally and how the ripple effect happens of how these things hit the communities and how it drives conversation.
Yes.
And the divisive wedges of conversation that it introduces. So yeah, I'll be paying close attention over the next month as things approach and all that kind of stuff. So I want to thank you for coming on tonight, as always, for taking the time to come on, these conversations.
You know, I'm here if you need me.
Always you are. And I greatly thank you for it. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to find you, where they can go to contact you for readings, for Reiki work.
There's a couple healing, of things I can say very quickly because I know you.
Please.
You can go to Amazon and you can find all my books on Amazon. Yep. My email is michaeljscarter@gmail.com. My website, which Brother Chris has put up for me, is michaeljscarter.com. There'll be some new pictures of my current look. What I wanted to say very quickly, Chris, is I had, I did 3 episodes of Ancient Aliens that were supposed to air in March, and they never did. And I was very concerned. I mean, I'm in the show business. It doesn't happen. And I found out just 2 months ago. Well, no, what am I saying? 2 months ago, 2 weeks ago, that they all got cut.
Oh, man.
They all got cut, but I'm supposed to be going to New York in about a month to shoot some other episodes.
Okay.
And you know what happens, either the writer decides or they go in a different direction and they apologize profusely, but I'm a big boy. I know it happens. But it was just disappointing because one of them, I think I told you, was going to be about, they wanted to do something on experiencers and they wanted to, it took 3 hours to do my story, but that's not going to happen. But I will keep you and, in mind, we're supposed to be doing something around Halloween. The weekend after Halloween.
Okay.
I may be in New York shooting, but, check me out. There are plenty of podcasts. Go to my website. Go see my books. And if you want to get in touch with me, just email me and I will respond.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, good Reverend. Thank you, as always. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for putting the new pictures on. I'll leave that up to you. I just wanted to have more current. And if you need me, call.
Absolutely. And may I say, the Cisco look suits you.
Thank you, brother. It's easier to take care of. With all those dreadlocks, I was swimming. Because, that's my exercise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to drown myself. So I am the Cisco.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much again, as always. Hold the line real quick while we close things out for this segment.
All right, brother.
While you are online checking out everything from Michael J.S. Carter at michaeljscarter.com, everybody, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/store is where you can find all of the books, videos, classes, everything by our guests. That's also where you can find your link to Curious Research and the Field Observation Log, everybody. When we come back, from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by our good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News. We will be talking about the recent UFO UAP hearing in Congress, updates on all of that, updates on the video that was famously put out, and explanations on that. So we will be back with that and more right after this, everybody.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for staying tuned through that. And also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by TrueHempScience.com today. I have been using the products made by Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science for easily the last 5 years. And I can attest to the fact that they are hands down some of the best CBD that I have found in dispensaries across the country, folks. Using a spigeric process, True Hemp Science uses every part of the hemp plant. Buds, seeds, stems, leaves, roots. Every part of the plant is used, reused, combusted, and reused to provide an amazing spigeric product full of terpenes, all kinds of good stuff. The terpene profiles and percentages are actually right there on their website. Stop on, check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to use. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. We are more than happy to welcome in this segment our good friend and security expert, Mike Turber. He is on the phone with us today. We are here to talk about the recent UAP panel that happened at the beginning of September. Welcome back, Mike. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, doing okay, sir. How are you?
Doing all right, man. It's always great to have you on the show. We've been intending to do this. You got ill. We both got busy. Yeah. But I've found it very interesting that there are not actually a lot of shows that covered this one. It's really interesting to already see the malaise within the UFO UAP community when it comes to the transparency and whistleblower hearings that are happening on Capitol Hill. And it's really amazing and sad to me. It really kind of puts an eye on the sensational side of things, Mike, when what you've been asking for years is actively happening before your eyes, but the only thing that you're looking for is that Houdini aha moment of somebody wheeling out a gurney with a sheet on top of it, with a body or wreckage. And like we've said every time, like we said with Earl Grey whenever we covered it with him, bless his soul, like we've said with you, that is not what's going to happen from these hearings.
No, it's not. There's a big gap between, I think, what the senators and the representatives see. And keep in mind, some of these senators don't even have, the proper security clearance.
That's right. They are waved into the meeting.
Correct. Yeah. On the, yeah, they're brought in on the, like a need to know basis kind of thing. And they're given enough information, but not, it's almost like, it's like a continuous tease.
Yeah.
It's like some of, you know, some of the more famous guys out there that, you know, push some of their videos and we get kind of used to that pattern where they overhype it and then we get to it and then it's not exactly what we thought it was going to be, but still it's a step forward. And as long as we're moving forward, I'm cool, but man, it's time. I mean,
same. And, you know, let's actually hear from Representative Luna. I think it's a great way to start is just with the opening minute, the opening statement of what this is really all about. And especially now, and some of the things that they literally called out, the Arrow report and Kilpatrick and the fact of like, wow, did you really have an active PSYOP officer in charge of Arrow, you know? And once again, I am not a fan of it. The only reason I am a fan of Arrow is because it has provided a unified system of reporting for those who wear wings and, you know, group insignias and rank on their sleeve, because without that, people's entire careers, people's pensions, people's wings, everything are on the line. Their families are on the line. Their health care for the rest of their life is on the line. All kinds of things are held over their heads.
Tim Phillips, when he revealed a couple of pieces of information that directly involved me, I thought that was a moment that I felt vindicated on so many different levels. You know, back because nine years, shortly after the three videos came out. And I said that the data was taken by DARPA and ended up, you know, Air Force had it. But DARPA was who was there testing, some of their equipment. And that's part of the overall picture. It's not the whole picture, but it's just that one small snippet.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And when he said that the previous director of DARPA, where they were at a cocktail party, and one of the people in Arrow walked over to him and said, "Hey," and the former director talks to him and says, "Hey, just want to let you know something. Here's a piece of information you may not know, but we're the people that went on the ship after the X-43 event, and we're the ones that got the data." And I'm like, wow. And I said that if anybody searches my name in DARPA, you'll see it there 9 years ago. But I got so lambasted for that, just left and right. But
I remember.
Feels good to be vindicated on some of these things.
Well, and that's just it. You know, the idea of even you aren't wearing stripes on your sleeve or wings on your chest or anything like that. You're just an independent private contractor that does some security contracting and computer work and things like that, and exfiltration work with people from Afghanistan, all kinds of stuff. But to know that at least now that there is a reporting system there is great. So let's hear from Senator Luna or Representative Luna real quick about this is all about.
Good morning and welcome to the hearing regarding UAP disclosures. For too long, the issue of unidentified anomalous phenomena, commonly known as UAPs, has been shrouded in secrecy, stigma, and in some cases, outright dismissal. Today, I want to state clearly that this is not science fiction or creating speculation. This is about national security, government accountability, and the American people's right to the truth. I've spoken now to a number of whistleblowers from the military to include the infamous Eglin Air Force Base incident that occurred when myself and former Representative Matt Gaetz, as well as Representative Burchett, followed up on a lead from multiple active duty Air Force pilot whistleblowers that alleged that the United States Air Force was covering up UAP activity at Eglin Air Force Base. We have heard from a number of whistleblowers, specifically military pilots, that the reason for not coming forward publicly is out of fear that speaking out would cost them their flight status and potentially their careers. This is unacceptable. We cannot protect our airspaces if our best trained observers are silenced. We cannot advance science if we refuse to ask questions. And we cannot maintain trust in government if we keep the American people in the dark.
Now, Congress. And, And that's just it. You know, that's exactly it. That's what I keep telling people, like my father. I love my father, but he is definitely of the generation that whenever this is brought up, I was like, oh, what are you talking about, little green men wasting all that time in Congress and everything? It's like, whoa, whoa, hold on. Despite wreckage, despite bodies, whatever, we have one person, David Grush, at the very least, whose testimony and written statements and everything else have amounted to the fact of it was his job to follow the money. And when he followed the money to the door with the checkbook, the door was slammed in his face.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the saying of follow the money rings true. But keep in mind, too, that most of the people that come forward are not involved in any of that process.
Yeah.
They happen to stumble across it. They, you know, a document gets leaked or something along those lines. It's not normally like the person who did it, you know, did the money deed or whatever.
Yeah.
Is coming out and has all the receipts and all this other stuff. And they're doing that. Cause if they did that,
that's right.
That person would never be seen again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important that, I think when David Grush came out at first, I took him with a grain of salt. I said, you know what, let me see what he's got to say.
Sure.
I don't normally put a lot of, you know, bite into, you know, a third party who doesn't have like all this direct evidence to support him. I mean, he's going by what someone told him for the most part. And I get it. And the argument has to go back and forth. And that somewhere in there has got to be a morsel of truth. And follow the money. And follow the facts and see where it goes, because there might be something entirely different going on. We all suspect that we know the military and the government tests equipment that otherwise we probably won't see for 20 to 30, 40 years. And then when it comes out, we're like, wow, you had this way back when. And so when these things come out, it's such a technology leap that a lot of people can't grab onto how that could be possible. Like the F-117A is a classic example.
Yep.
That was kept secret for over 20 years. And, you know, with that being the case, it was a weird looking plane. It can't really fly well. It has to have a computer to fly it. But everyone that has flown it love it. You know, you go into a combat zone and you're going to probably come home and no one's going to know you were there until, you know, boom, boom happens.
And that's what every single pilot always said was like, you know, this thing should not be like, when you look at it, this thing should not be in the air. Like it should.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just because of the right angles and the facets and the panels, it should not be flying. It's the computer that enables it to fly with the micro adjustments on the regs to make that happen. That a human pilot would not be able to do.
I remember when some images of the Have Blue, which was the first version of it, came out, where people were, you know, taking pictures from far away and then, you know, underneath and stuff like this. So they had the general shape, but not the complete profile. And they were building like balsa wood representations of what this plane might look like. A couple of them were pretty close. Some were pretty far off base, but there were a couple got pretty close, and they would basically weighted down, put an engine in or something like that and try to see if it can fly, and they couldn't get it to fly. And they're like, this has got to be not real. And then that's where a lot of the, you know, people hear that and they don't have time to research it for hours or days. And they hear that. And then the jump to alien technology is made, which it very well could be. I can't rule it out. But at the same time, if you make that jump without something to point you there, it kind of pulls you back in a little bit, and your neighbors start looking at you kind of funny, and you know, they look at my tattoo on my arm a little funny. They're like, "What's that? A sparkler?"
Yeah, because Have Blue started in late 70s. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, the design came out in the 60s.
Yeah,
and then they actually started building in the 70s. And
but it wasn't until like Panama in 91. When we took down Noriega, that we first heard of it.
Yep. That was the first time it was revealed that I think Bush came on and he says, well, cat's out of the bag, but this aircraft is able to fly unimpeded without any harm coming to it or whatever. You know, of course, they beef it up, but you can shoot these things down. but that's what they were doing. And the F-117, stealth Nighthawk, did its job. And by the time we saw it, it was already getting ready to be mothed. Yeah,
The B-2 was already coming out.
Yeah, the B-2 was already coming out. And then, and just like when the B-21 Raider started to gain some momentum. And I mean, a lot of people don't look at those two airplanes and see why we spent so much money on the difference. But once you see the technology inside, then it starts to make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, it was shortly after Noriega that we went to the first, that we went to Desert Storm and everything else, where both of those planes really, really made their true bones as far as things go. And that's
that
just
the cruise missiles. I'll never forget watching CNN with Bernard Shaw saying, here comes a missile. It just turned left on, whatever street, and now it took a right and it's heading off to its target.
It was shock and awe
is happening.
It was truly the shock and awe campaign original form. Yeah. And
watching those tracer rounds crisscrossing the sky over Baghdad, that was, it was pretty, but at the same time, it's, it's not pretty when you think about what's happening, but still it was a very, very unique sight to see that, otherwise a lot of people around the world don't see it.
Well, and speaking of things that a lot of people in the world don't see, Mr. Nucitelli, former UA, former Air Force military police, was one of the witnesses that was sworn in and gave his statement and talked about Vandenberg Air Force Base and a red cube, as well as intimidation of people by the military, by other agencies, things like that. So let's hear from him real quick about his case and what he testified to.
The incursions began on October 14th, 2003, when Boeing contractors reported a massive glowing red square silently hovering over two missile defense sites. After several minutes, it drifted further east onto the base and vanished over the hills. This event, now known as the Vandenberg Red Square, was referenced by Representative Luna at the first hearing on this topic. Official Air Force records of this event are in possession by Aero and the FBI. Later that night, while I was on duty, security guards at a critical launch site reported a bright, fast-moving object over the ocean. I responded to the incident. Chaos ensued over the radio as the object approached rapidly. I heard my friends screaming, "It's coming right at us, it's coming right for us, and now it's right here." Moments later, I heard them say that it had shot off and was gone. When I arrived on scene, I talked to five shaken witnesses who described a massive, triangular craft larger than a football field that hovered silently for about 45 seconds over their entry control point before shooting away at impossible speed. About a week later, another patrol reported a light over the ocean behaving erratically. Believing it might be an unannounced aircraft, they declared an emergency, and an armed response force responded. Before the forces could arrive, the object descended and either landed or hovered on our flight line and then took off again at impossible speed. The witnesses to this event were threatened and intimidated afterward. They were told to keep quiet and think about what they were reporting. After that, things did get quiet until about 2005, when another patrol reported a massive triangular craft larger than a C-130, silently floating over the installation. He watched it for a few minutes. It traveled west and disappeared into the night.
Now, when you hear that from somebody, literally a military police personnel, it's no different than hearing it from a sheriff's deputy or something like that. Like these are people who are used to taking witness statements. They are more than accustomed to being able to tell the BS, be able to render the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in the field. So to hear somebody of that investigative ilk talking about this and saying that, like, people were intimidated. And when somebody tells an MP that they were intimidated, you know, that's fascinating.
It is. And then there's the problem on my end is because I have to go in and look at the evidence, and I become the bad guy because I find this or that, and then it happened. And I take the blows, and, you know, I'm not going to be the most popular podcast ever because, simply put, people don't want to hear you know, things being solved. They like to keep that mystery going. And I get it. I fully get it. I just feel it's important that anytime that we're going forward on a subject matter that is as important as this particular subject is, it is paramount, especially when it comes to our borders being incursioned on. Now, let me come up with a new word for that.
Yeah.
You know, and all of these different things are encroached upon. And, you know, our bases having these objects fly over at will. And that was what we were told by Lou Elizondo that they were going to partly do with OSAP / ATIP was to basically categorize drones into, you know, friend or foe, obviously, first, and then start going down a list of what, you know, is it a threat? The key question is, are these things threats? And the way he described this object, like it was taking on like packages or taking on equipment and things like that. Well, that reminds me of that big, that blue, often mistaken for a TRB, but it's more or less like an aerostat, type dirigible, but it has the three long pontoons on each side. And it reminds me kind of that. But I'm not saying that's what it is, in no way. But, you know, people will hear that and they'll say, oh, he said it was a balloon. No, not what I'm saying. But we just don't have enough evidence. I fully support everyone who has any type of sighting or whatever it is, whether it's spiritual, whether it's a physical, whether it's a first, second, third, fourth, fifth kind, anything like that. You have to respect those people because the experience they had to them, or it was actually real. You can't take that away. And if you do that, you basically shut down a whole line of conversation that might have allowed you to figure out what things are. That brings me back to like the drone that they showed in the Hellfire video.
Yeah.
That's going to be kind of interesting because there's a lot of ticks in the boxes that have to be checked off for it to even, you know, become a threat.
That's
to
right.
The point where we're going to launch a air to ground missile at a air to air
target,
you know, target.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that they did that.
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, we have the conversation regularly with our good friend Dan Harari from Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. The whole idea of the dialogue and where is the dialogue going? And even after during and after the drone hearings, we had Anthony Esimpla on talking about, you know, the fact of like, look, you can see them like setting up where the funding will come from. Like you can see them riling up the fear right now. It was right after the last UFO UAP hearing where Lou Elizondo and everybody, and when they asked like, why aren't we having a bigger conversation? The words out of everybody's mouth were, if we had a bigger conversation, it would expose the fact that we have gaping holes over sensitive areas.
Right. Yeah, and that's very true.
And then we started seeing drones over sensitive areas everywhere, all over the country, all over the globe. And next thing you know, we're having an emergency funding hearing about what to do about the drones. And yeah. that's when we find out that the FBI has like a $500,000 budget nationwide, nationwide for drone mitigation technology. Folks, that's the stuff to like point a gun at the drone and like bring it down or knock out the radio signal. Or trace the radio signal, all kinds of a $500,000 budget nationally. That's $10,000 per state. That is nothing. Yeah. A decent DJI Mavic drone costs $2,500, man.
I mean, if you think about it, that's the salary of maybe five upper-level employees.
And that's with zero tech other than just a standard camera on it. Not exactly. like forward-looking infrared or thermal or radiography or anything like that. So,
You know, it's like the Ukraine drones. They're modeled to be super simple. They can do quantity versus, you know, their quality's there. But, you know, the problem I have with it is it has to lay a line down to fly to its target, which presents other issues for it.
Well,
but it can't be jammed.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, and that's just it. And a lot of people don't realize that stuff. The fact that even which we'll get into the Houthi drone in a minute, but many drones, specifically military drones, things like that are one-way drones where it's like they are going to go, they're going to deploy, and then they're going to come back. They don't necessarily have a pilot behind them. They are flying by fiber optic and like a Raspberry Pi with the GPS inside. You know, right. where it goes to target, deploys, and comes right back home, you know.
Well, they can also do, you know, the map of the Earth
Well, yeah, and, it's just the fact of there's no signal to hack or anything like that. It's right. operating off a hard brain inside of it. So unless you got an EMP to take that out or some way to bring the drone down, you aren't going to interrupt the radio signal that's taking it to its target package.
Yeah,
you know,
you won't. And some of them are flown in quantities to where you'll have two or three drones that are pinging like crazy, and they're all the radar systems are, you know, looking at that. And that's kind of like it's the difference between a rogue nation kind of thing like the Houthis, and then a Ukrainian nation which has incredible technology, but the way that they've approached several of the abilities to attack someone with drones is very unique and different between the two. But each one sees the successes of the others or the failures of the others, and they build upon that, and they can regroup really fast. Whereas when we build a missile system, we spend, you know, billions and billions of dollars to, you know, sometimes 10 to 20 years in development before we get it out. And by the time it comes out, you know, it may be somewhat antiquated, but they've corrected a lot of that. And I, you know, applaud that. When I was at, Vandenberg, they had received, a shipment because they were, you know, they launched Trident missiles off the coast there.
Yeah.
And that's Lompoc is the name of the city there. And what they wanted to do was to see if they could laze this thing from two or three different lasers, one land-based, one air-based, and one sea-based. And only one was completely successful. But and that was in the initial phase going up. So that's the important thing is to know that coming down, force of another color. We don't have enough data to say that we're confident about that, but the Iron Dome and then our version of that, it's going to be pretty interesting when we see it in action. Hopefully we'll never see it in action, but if we do, it's going to be a unique sight to see.
Well, and speaking of unique sights to see, the next person who actively testified was Chief Wiggins, Navy Chief Petty Officer. Now let's get into something real quick, because Chief Petty Officer ain't no scrub. That is the highest rank that can be attained by a non-commissioned officer. In the U.S. Navy, which means you have been there for a while. You have been doing your job for a while and you are really, really good at your job. Now
and you've seen some things.
Chief Wiggins is thus far the only witness or whistleblower to come forth who is still active duty. Now, this is huge.
Yeah.
And this is something that I don't think anybody has given any credence to in the communities or anything like that. Once again, I'm almost sickened by the dismissive tone of the communities who have begged for this for years. And then once they get it, they're like, well, this isn't what we wanted. And it's like, dude, you're never going to get the technology until it hits your shelf. Like friggin' George Jetson, you are not going to get the technology, people. You're not going to see the DNA sequence. You're not going to see a chunk of hand or anything like that wheeled out on the floor of Congress. What you're going to see is a legal means by which to hold people accountable, where we will get an Ollie North type figure who stands up and says, yes, we sold missiles like this dude is saying, and we did it, or we sold drugs to buy missiles to sell to these people.
Yep.
You know,
and then you have to trickle down, you know, theory.
Yeah. So when you hear from an actual vested member of the military, not just like, hey, I'm a guard, I'm an E2 and I guard the gate, you know, like this is a career member of the military who has been given dispensation by the Navy to come before Congress and testify about his UFO experience and keep his stripes on his sleeve and keep his career. So
my curiosity to that each time it happens, just like when the 1910 forms were done by Lou, changing the classification of the three videos. And, you know, of course, you know, he wasn't exactly straightforward with that, but he did get him out and we got to see him, and, you know, and kudos and props, or else you and I wouldn't be having this conversation at all.
Sure.
But at the same time, you start looking at some of the other people that are bringing out information, and you wonder how much is, because if they're given kind of like the permissions, so to speak, it's not called that, but you have to go through DOPSR and stuff like that. But if they're given somewhat permission to say certain things, it kind of opens up that door a little bit. And like when I was watching Tim Phillips after he stepped down from Arrow, he was so candid and open, but you know, and I knew exactly the things he couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
But he said enough to make my day. And, you know, and as you watch these people come forward, you know, they are risking a lot because they could accidentally screw up on live television and in their career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They could absolutely unskiff something there. And what then, you know? So let's listen to what Chief Petty Officer Wiggins had to say about his experience, which is very interesting because it's not a past, but like it's 2023. So it's a pretty recent experience to be talking about.
Recorded was not consistent with conventional aircraft or drones as they appear on our system.
Oh yeah, he's also in the radar world. A
tic-tac-shaped object emerged from the ocean before linking up with three other similar objects. The four then disappeared simultaneously with a high synchronized near instantaneous acceleration. I observed no sonic boom and no conventional propulsion signatures. No exhaust plume, no control surface articulation on the Sapphire image system. Shortly after the synchronized departure, radar tracks dropped. These observations were multi-sensor and recorded inside of ICC-1 with time location overlay visible in our source frames that have been made public by journalists. From my experience operating in this region over many years and consistent with our public characterized encounters, unidentified objects reoccur in United States operation areas off Southern California. That fact alone does not tell us what they are, but it does argue the systematic stigma-free reporting and for the preservation of sensor data so analysts can evaluate safe and intelligence implications with rigor. I want to underscore 3 points for the task force and the committee.
So, yeah, that idea of there now being a process by which to save these data points, there now being a process by which to preserve the testimonies. And it's not just like, okay, you filled out a form, now it gets shredded, you know.
Right. And I can say that they have, I can't say exactly what's going on, but I can say that there is a internal program that allows them to contact people that they feel have a certain expertise in a particular area that will help them identify what these objects are. Whereas previously, it didn't seem that the concern was not to find out what it was. It was just like the mystery was just there and just perpetuated. And it's like, well, what was it? And the bigger question when you hear that is, we're the most technologically advanced military in the world, and we have these things overflying military installations, and we don't know what they are, which is kind of a misnomer, because we kind of do. Well, it's just we can't reveal, you know, our technology and our sensors and their, you know, what they can detect and what they can't. And that's an issue that they basically will take to the grave, so to speak.
That is also one of the beautiful things about Chief Petty Officer Wiggins is the fact of he is a radar officer.
Yeah.
So he knows what these tech signatures are. He knows what the radiation reflectivity of certain objects are, and what our sensor platforms would be, what the latest sensor platforms would be able to do, unless something is being red teamed, as we've said before with the Nimitz encounter and things like that.
Correct. And, you know, there's a certain aspect to this. When you start to analyze what you can get your hands on, you have to hypothesize a possible scenario.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And when I plugged in a possible scenario for the Nimitz events, it's immediately separated the events into three or four separate things. And arbitrarily after the fact, it was brought all together. And I get the reason why, because people watch, you know, the Nimitz encounters, and they think this all happened within 15, 20 minutes, when in fact this is over a period of many hours, many days, even when you include the data from Kevin. And that alone, means that you have to detach yourself from any thought process that you have as to what you think it is.
Yeah.
And you just look at the raw, what you have. And I was able to speak to certain people. I spoke to the people that worked on the X-43 project and was able to, you know, come up with what I believe that object to be, that Chad filmed, you know, totally separate from the other two events. And of course, it's very difficult to put that out there and have people accept that with all of the other stories that go out there. So I'll be that lone voice in the background that, you know, I'll hold my guns and until something better comes along that points me in another direction, I'll hold on to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's important that we get this right.
It is.
Especially on a subject. I mean, there's only maybe one or two possible subjects more important than this, but the "are we alone" and "are they coming here" question is probably one of the oldest questions of all time that needs to be answered. And it may have a lot of religious and spiritual undertones to it. There may be a whole lot of answers to people that have spiritual and religious backgrounds that can now plug in some answers that make sense, where, you know, there's a technology gap, or if there's a evolution gap and so forth. And that is intriguing to me, you know?
And when you talk about that, it is the conversation of society, and it's something that I brought up at the 9/11 conference, man. And it's something that, like, we are right now experiencing with this, which is there is a period of time and a beautiful window of time. Like, we're coming up on that with 9/11. All right.
Right.
We're coming up on that because it's coming up on the 25th anniversary. And much like after the Warren Commission, which was done as slapshot as possible to get something out and appease the American public, 25 years after the Warren Commission, suddenly people's, quote, conspiracy theories actually made a whole lot of sense, because people had 25 years to pick that little thing apart and find out that there is a lot of slipshod investigation done here. So it brings up more credence into people's minds as to what people may have hypothesized in the past. And we're coming up on that with 9/11. The idea of people being comfortable with the fact of, oh, no, no, like we did go to war with a country other than the where the hijackers came from. Oh, no, no, we did rapidly pick everything up without doing a full forensic investigation. All kinds of things. And we are coming up right now. We're in that window of double that almost for UFOs, because we're talking about Roswell in 1947 and now 2025, we're talking about double. So now it's a double down of not only people being interested, but people wanting friggin' accountability.
Yeah.
Because it's still been going on, and we know it's still been going. We know something's been going on with all the black money and the budgets and everything else. So now it's to the point of accountability, and what are we going to do?
And I think for the most part, you know, civilians can understand why our government doesn't tell us everything.
Yeah.
You can't. It'd be a breach of security. It's the same reason why Russia doesn't tell us everything, neither does China.
Right.
They're not going to tell us the specs of the next thing coming on down the pike. But at the same time, some of these things have to be within the realm of actual possibility to some degree, unless there is something that we should know. And that, for me, I think that's where all of us can get along on the same page. If there was an event that occurred to where alien life forms came to this planet and did anything that we have truly documented that really happened, it's that time is now. Yeah. We can know that now. It doesn't reveal, you know, our capabilities. It's, you know, the rest of the world is kind of scared of us. And, you know, they think we've reverse engineered things. They see Bob Lazar and, you know, things he talks about and all these different things. And it makes sense that we have the money. I mean, you go to a country and say, hey, I'll give you $500 million to that UFO you just found in the woods. Okay, here you go.
And here's the thing. We're about to play George Knapp, who was there. And I think his statement really at the beginning, sums up a lot of that, man, truly. And even the idea, which he gets into later, we won't have time for that clip because we want to start debunking and getting into, not necessarily debunking, but possibly explaining the video that was played. But one of the things he talks about in his later statements, feel free to go watch everything, folks. Go to curiousrealm.com/videos. We have a declassified government playlist there, and that is where you can find the actual, not like from somebody else's channel, but from the actual House channel, from the Senate channel, you can find the actual hearing. But he says, which we're about to hear about the contractors, but later on, he mentions, I'm sure at this point, 50 years down the line, because he's like, all these contractors are doing exactly what their job is, which is to keep their mouth shut and shut up.
Right.
That is what their oath is to the defense world and things like that. So when they're given something, they're told to shut up about it and to just research it. So that's what they do. They do exactly what their job is, and you can't blame them for doing that. He's like, but I imagine at this point, 50 years down the road, with these technologies and these things being compartmentalized to the extreme the way that they are, I'm sure that they are all looking for a technological off-ramp to be able to collaborate and actually get somewhere with all of this technology. Because, you've only got like a very compartmentalized group working on the materials science, working on the application science, things like that. Mm-hmm. So at some point, you're actively stymieing yourself by not having cooperation scientifically and not having competition. You know, like there's a reason why Have Blue happened as fast as it did. It's because it was an open competition for a contract. We got Mars Curiosity rovers as fast as we did because of competition. When you subtract that competition from science and industry, you end up stymieing technology, not burgeoning it.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating thing.
It is. It's an amazing thing. And part of the picture that needs to be painted as well is if they put a prize, like a lottery prize, that whoever figures out what this thing is and we ever get it will win $1 million or $1 billion or whatever it is. It doesn't matter because it's super important. And that would, for some people, that may be what motivates them.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's just it. You know, if you were able to take one piece of this material and throw it in front of a group of, you know, college students that are working on material science and have different concepts about things, like imagine where we'd be. And let's hear from George Knapp real quick. From KLAS Las Vegas.
Yeah, this is one of the better moments.
This is a great moment. He really lays some stuff down, and this is about a 2-3 minute clip, folks. So snuggle in, but it's a good one.
Who was the guy who initiated a program called AWSAP, Advanced Aerospace Weapons Systems Application Program, which is, as far as we know, the largest acknowledged UFO program ever funded by the U.S. government, which put together an amazing pile of information that members of this committee and the world, most of which have never seen. The DIA still hasn't released 95% of what was prepared by that program, at a cost of millions and millions of dollars. The one name I do want to bring up in this session, though, is Robert Bigelow. So looking into the idea of crash retrievals and reverse engineering, while AWSAP, that program, was active, the DIA's contractor, Robert Bigelow of Las Vegas, made a bold attempt to acquire physical proof of UFO crashes. It's been widely reported and suspected that Lockheed Martin is one of the contractors, the defense contractors, that has held this stuff, stored it away in secrecy, and tried to figure out how it works. I have confirmed on the record that Robert Bigelow and a trusted colleague from AWSAP met with and negotiated with senior executives at Lockheed Martin and hammered out a deal wherein Bigelow's company, BASS, would receive a quantity of unusual material that had been stashed away and protected at a facility in California. That material was not made here. I want to move on now to the Russia files, because that was going to be sort of the central impetus of what I was going to talk to you about today. Back in the early 90s, I got into Russia, met with a number of their defense officials, Ministry of Defense and others, who confirmed for me that Russia had been doing the same thing the United States had been doing, that is, secretly studying UFOs while publicly saying something completely different. The documents and interviews that I obtained and have now shared with this task force show that the USSR launched what is almost certainly the largest UFO UAP investigation in the world. The first phase of that was an order was sent out to the entire USSR military empire that every unit, you see anything strange in the sky, a craft, an orb, something unusual, you had to gather all the evidence, collect testimony from the witnesses, look for physical evidence, and all of that information went into one program at the Ministry of Defense. Thousands and thousands of these reports came in.
Sound familiar,
everybody? A lot of them were first routed to the KGB.
That is,
and back to another program.
That's kind of exactly what we did. Eventually,
yeah.
But basically, you know, it came out recently, Mike. And I am of no surprise when it happened. The community was in all kind of kerfuffle when the last article from Leslie Keen came out in the New York Times. She was, of course, the one that wrote the initial article about black budgets, black money, and UFOs, which exposed light on things. But the latest one was the fact that alphabet agencies and contractors thereof for decades have used stories that are spun inside of the UFO UAP community as cover for their black projects. Which, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? If your job is black bag work, if your job is keeping secrets and coming up with cover stories, when a perfectly good one is floated by the people that you want to buy it anyway, just latch on and use it. Like, why? You don't even need a PSYOP officer at that point. The public's doing it for you.
The IC community has a lot of ways to measure, you know, put the dipstick in and kind of measure what's going on with the civilian population as it relates to specific subjects. The biggest test bed ever was when social media went nuts with the three Navy videos. And that, again, that's why we're here today. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, you have to understand that some of the best things that a government has been blamed for are things that they never even did.
That's right.
You know, some of these stories, you put something out there, people make up their thing about it, and then that runs, and then multiple conspiracy theories are born from that, or just theories, not necessarily conspiracy theories. I don't mean to be disrespectful to anyone, but each one has its own, you know, merits and demerits, and what makes it work and what makes it kind of doesn't work. But either way, the government doesn't really need to do as much as a lot of people think. Now, there's a division at NSA, and it's called S-32. It used to be called Tailored Access Operations. And I think now they just call it Equipment Operations or Computer Operations. I don't remember if they've switched it again. But that organization, when it was ran by Rob Joyce before he did his 25-year thing and left there, there was a shift in how the approach was made from some of the older ways, because keep in mind, General Michael Hayden was running that organization. And when you have a civilian organization and a military organization with mixed employees inside, you get mixed results from a lot of the things you try, but that's a good thing, because otherwise you might not see something that you know, that should otherwise be out there.
You may only get myopic results otherwise.
Exactly. And people get caught up in the causality loop, if you want to call it that, or, you know, the butterfly effect and all these different things that we remember things happening that probably didn't actually happen, but they were suggested to us. And those are in our minds. And sometimes we just swear on a sack of Bibles that, hey, this actually happened. And when that's taken away from someone, it is devastating.
Yeah.
It is truly devastating. And that I have a problem with. If the government is doing anything like that, I haven't ran across any specific thing in the organizations that I worked with, which would be NGA, NRO, you know, NSA, and various other smaller entities in between. You know, those entities did not have an active program other than NSA, where they would have a true disinfo campaign. CIA would have it. They had the civilian version have it. Then you have the legal version have it, which is the FBI. And then you have the military version of it, which is pretty much NSA putting things out there or testing the waters to see what's going on.
Yeah.
So all three different types of agencies, three completely different approaches on how they handle this.
Yeah.
Some of them get quite interesting results. My personal favorite, to be honest with you, the FBI seems to have had a lot of success on getting things done when it comes to drones and stuff like that. But they have reached out. I can say with 100% guaranteed authority that this has happened, to individuals that would look at something and give them a alternative, opinion as to what maybe it is that they're looking at. And many names can come to mind as to who those might be. But that doesn't mean that they're looking at those people and saying, well, okay, we're just going to use this guy from now on. That was a fast answer and it sounds right.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And sorry about my voice.
You're good. That's just it. You know, the idea that these things are there, that these programs are there and that black money exists. It's shifted around regularly, and that, you know, once again, there is a large gap, not just funding gap, but technology gap, as far as what many of our domestic agencies have and have access to, you know. Once again, even just the drone mitigation technology budget of $500,000. Nationally, less than $1 million, less than $1 million nationally. That's not even a film budget. You'd have a bigger drone budget on a film production.
That's true. Hell, even at one point in time, my drone collection was probably over that.
You know, like it's ridiculous. I own more AV gear than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's put it that way. Like as an individual, I own more AV gear than that. It's crazy.
There you go.
It's crazy. So, you know, it's one of those things that like it's wild when you think about it. And once again, it's there are numerous people talking who are aware of technologies, who know about the technologies, at least what our military uses and what the capabilities are. So when they are saying once again that this is something that no platform I receive signals from in radar will do, that's something that we should pay attention to. And you know, that kind of brings us to the video, the Hellfire missile video, because this is one that I sat in D.C. Watching these hearings as they happened, just so sad that I was not able to get there one day earlier and be there while they happened to be able to get clearance and get into the building. When I saw the video, it was one of those that really just kind of I'm not going to say that there was a whole lot of suspension of disbelief for me or anything like that. It's more the fact of I saw something. We need to remember, folks, that any of these videos, even the ones that Lou first put out, Go Fast, Gimbal, all that kind of stuff, Nimitz, those first three, we need to consider why they've been released. No different than seeing an anonymous post in a Bigfoot group with a foot track. You need to question why it's coming from an anonymous source to begin with.
Yeah.
And take that into your data set. And we need to take into our data set that, yes, Lou Elizondo not only had security clearances at the time, but even after releasing videos, which were not good. They were cleared for departmental release, interdepartmental release. So like, hey, you take a look at this. Tell us what you think, because we got nothing. But they weren't necessarily cleared for media release, for a wide source media release like that. So how do you keep your clearances? When you look at videos like this, even Go Fast is a prime example, because NASA eviscerated that in the first panel. And it was one of those, like, why did this even make it this far? Like, data is on screen to be able to tell you at least the generalities of this object and put it into the realm of known quantitative and move forward. So why did this make it this far?
That's where the big beef between myself and Lou Elizondo started, was with GoFast. Within hours of the release of the video, we were looking at it, and I'm like, wait a minute. With this information, we should be able to figure out quite a few, you know, tidbits.
Yeah.
And what concerned me was TTSA had gone through all of the vetting process and the looking at the videos and said, okay, we're gonna hunker down and push these videos out, and we're gonna put all our eggs behind these three eggs, so to speak, if you're gonna call it that, not a tic tac. But the problem I have is that someone somewhere who would be a qualified true advisor should have looked at them and said, hey, you might want to just do the other two for now, because this one is quite clearly
handled. And you have to wonder why that one stayed in, why others have come out. Things like that. You always have to wonder, and it's even something that Jacques Vallée has said in the last 6 months. Like, you have to wonder why the UFO UAP community suddenly has such trust with the U.S. government, with world governments. Suddenly, all the data that we're getting is from the government.
Yeah.
And that's something that you have to consider, just in the world of black bag work, just in the world of controlled information work, things like that. You know, are we being worked? Are we being massaged? Because there is that forced perspective concept, you know, the idea of like somebody squeezing the Eiffel Tower between their fingers. That's a forced perspective image. And when you start off with the forced perspective of describing a video, telling you what you're about to see in the video, then showing the video, and in the video, they're like, woohoo, I got it. Look at that, man. Look at that thing go. Everything else, despite the literal information for trigonometry that's given on the screen, everybody was willing to let the forced perspective continue.
Yeah. And you had proponents such as Eric Davis and, you know, Hal Puthoff and so forth. And I think you remember the picture of Hal Puthoff with my video about GoFast on his desktop when he was doing his a thing. But, you know, you start to wonder, okay, so they have to know that there is an issue with this video. They have to question the experts that they hired to basically reiterate what they said. Because for the television show, they said that, oh yeah, this thing is hauling ass. And these objects are, you know, flying low and low to the surface of the ocean. And they're, you know, I don't know about most people, but, you know, 11 to 13,000 feet isn't exactly near the surface of the ocean. It looks that way when you watch the video.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. And the calculations are right there. So,
I was going to say, I'm playing the video from the hearing right now. And it's got the wide shot on there and everything else. You can see it cruising along. And then you see the missile come in and hit it, the Hellfire. Yeah. And I'm going to bring it back up again, folks, so that we can watch the whole thing. Because it really is one of those, it's fascinating when you watch it to see it happen in real time.
And one of those things while you're queuing it up is that the missile that they used to shoot down this drone is if it in fact was a Hellfire, because I have a little question about that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, to use a Hellfire, which is a air to ground.
That's right.
Missile. It's not designed to shoot other aircraft, although they've had limited success in doing that, but not so much with drones because drones are tiny. And compared to, you know, hitting, you know, a full on aircraft or some of the larger drones that are out there, which brings me into the part of the video that I think I can explain, especially when you take into account where this video was taken and which platform actually took the video, because it was not a Reaper that took this video. It was a Predator.
And that's just it. You know, getting into, I've been playing the video in the background. Yeah. I just paused it right after the quote moment of contact on screen. And you know, you can basically see the object come in. You can see it hit the drone, or we say drone. I say drone. I know you say drone too, but we can see the missile hit the object. And once that happens, it looks like the missile misses and moves around the back. Now, here's a couple things, folks. Number one, when a missile fires, you've got an activation zone, and B, the fact that it's activated and armed. If that missile goes disarmed, you will be alerted to the disarming of that missile. Yeah?
Correct.
You know?
Correct.
So why was there no mention during this of, because, I mean, we're talking about having witnesses talk about UFOs come over nuclear facilities, stuff like that. So what's the harm in saying that one of these things disarmed a missile?
Well, let's reduce this back down to
if it's a craft or something like that. But
so go ahead. Let's reduce it down to the known things we have.
Yeah.
The aircraft was shot down, whatever it was, and just off the coast of Yemen. Yemen is a Houthi hotbed, and they have been known to use drones to attack our forces. But they also have had many of their drones taken out. So they have tried to initiate some sort of defensive measures to prevent their drones from being hit. And from the viewpoint from the predator, which is actually filming this, the object that shot at it was a Reaper, but the object that was filming it was a predator. That's a fact that apparently no one seems to care about, but it has very little bearing, but it's something to know. But when you look at it, the top of the drone is a kind of an oval shape. And the drone that I think I sent you the image of is a multi-rotor, copter. It has six rotors. Yeah. And that object, when it is hit, the missile was making a turn at that time. So I calculated that missile was probably going at the low end, 300 and something miles per hour or knots, and at the high end, maybe around 600 or 700, but not the 950 that it's supposed to be, because it's a solid rocket motor, and that motor doesn't really, you can't really throttle it too much, but you can vein it to give it steering. And you can see at that last moment that it seemed to be like on a slide going into it. So it was like it did a slight S turn as it was, acquiring that object. So when you look at this drone here, you have to kind of visualize seeing it from the top up at that center part is an oval shape. So when you see it from above, you can actually see that. If you look real careful, you see the ring at the bottom. That ring is there to somewhat protect that missile, or to provide some other form of purpose, of which we don't 100% know, but I'm going to say it's some form of protection to allow the incoming missile, whether it's radar guided or infrared or whatever, to focus on that ring, because the missiles generally are going to come up from the bottom and not from the top down. And as such, if you look real carefully, when that ring at the bottom is hit, and when we see the aftermath of the hit, you'll see that there's three objects traveling along with I'm just going to call it the drone for lack of a better way to describe it, traveling along with it. The shape of the attachment point where those legs are looks just like the objects that we see, the three objects as they're flying through the air. And if the leg is still attached to those attachment points, it would make sense that it would, fly at that angle. And maybe the fourth leg stayed with the drone, or maybe it was, hit off or whatever. But as you watch the sequence of events, you see the Hellfire come into view at a speed that I don't agree with being 950 miles an hour. If you take the Hellfire and measure the length of the missile, it's 5'10" or so, and you can actually frame it out at 30 frames per second, which is what this video came out to be, and determine how far it flew just by frame, and calculate how far it went. You know the size of the drone, of the Hellfire, and then you can calculate how far it went, and then from that you can divide that by time and you have the speed. That's what everybody's done, and it's all over the map as to what that is, because the drone, the Hellfire image is not super clear. So, measuring that distance maybe off by 20% or more.
And I've got
as you watch,
I've got it paused, and you can see the little triangle of objects behind it after it gets hit, like you're talking about. And once again, to bring that image up, you can see how if you were to glancingly hit that and the three joists up top connecting to the drone, it would be hanging off the circle would be hanging down with those things flapping around behind it. Now, once again, with the, with the quality of the image at that distance, you can't necessarily see the thin flat bars that are holding that, but what you can see is the reflection off of those buckles that would hold that ring onto the top, onto the bottom of that are being dragged behind.
If you can zoom in on that attachment section, or the not on the picture I sent you of the Houthi drone, but the this image here when it shows kind of a close up of those objects that are flying along.
Yeah,
try to zoom in on the area and look at the shape of what that shape is and then compare that to what we see on the drone. And it's very darn close.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just it. They maintain a triangular shape.
Yeah.
As they move. And the one thing that I've brought up, I'll bring up a quick image of it, because here is an image of what would appear to be a typical Hellfire missile, folks. Now, this is the one that I've been talking about online, which is the R9X, the Ninja, which is not an explosive warhead. Now, once again, it's important to note that these missiles, the Hellfire platform, is made to fire from air to surface. So they do not, as most air-to-air missiles have, they do not have a proximity effect. Because, you know, once again, you're trying to shoot a bullet with a bullet when you're trying to hit a missile, trying to make a missile hit an object that's flying.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily want to try to impact the object. Your chances of actually hitting that are very small. So what you want to do is get it near the object and explode it with shrapnel. And now you have a huge exploding cloud of shrapnel that the object has to fly through.
Right.
And that's what causes the damage. Now, not the way the Hellfire works, because it's made to impact the ground. It's made to impact tanks or cars or other personnel, other objects on the ground, even small buildings, stuff like that. So the idea is it has a G-force detector that detects a certain amount of G stoppage. And once it hits that, it explodes. Once again, there's zero signal that's reported about it being disarmed in the air. So if it doesn't hit, it's not going to explode. But what I'm talking about is that curve around the object that happens, you know, because it's a solid booster rocket. So you're going to have some steerage, but you're not going to be able to have it like a guided missile in that kind of way. No. You know, because you can't control the thrust. You can't control how much thrust is coming out of the back. You may be able to vector it somewhat, but you can't control the nozzle size.
Yeah, you have very little control over the speed.
Yeah,
But you do have control over, you know, whipping the end around. And I think that some of the type of energy that from the angle that the Hellfire was fired, a direct hit from a 45-degree angle, it's not an ideal hit.
No.
Especially if it was the Ninja Blade version.
Well, and that's what I wanted to show was this video of the Ninja Blade, where you can see where it's a dummy load. It's actually just weighted. The idea is it's a kinetic hit. So you're working on the weight of the object and the speed of the object and gravity. And in addition to that, it's got these razors that pop out. We famously took down, a member of Al-Qaeda with this missile, like in his armored vehicle. And that was its first foray out there, where we were like, we took it out with the new Ninja missile, everybody. But if you look at those blades on the side that are popping out, that makes a lot more sense to me anyway, as far as the glancing blow. And I call it a glancing blow because you can kind of see the missile shake a little bit as it goes around that object. So I think that, same thing, Houthi drone like you're talking about. But what happened was the blade glanced through those three and tore it off.
I would guess that the...
Now, that watch round that ring, curve around, everybody.
Yeah, that round... if you can slow it down at that moment. The round ring that's at the bottom of that drone is effectively there to somewhat protect the actual... bomb that it's carrying.
Yeah.
And so they probably put either reflective material or infrared, something that tickles the infrared sensor, to have it, go to that part of the drone, because the top part of the drone, which is where all the electronics are, can still fly along, after it's hit. I've seen a DJI Matrix drone with lose two of its arms. It's like an octopus style drone, but it loses two of its arms and was still able to complete the entire footage that we were trying to get. It was a motorcycle commercial. And so that is in and of itself, for me at least, because, obviously if I'm flying drones all the time, I'm pretty familiar with some of the other ways to take them down. is an answer to that. And yeah, there you go right there. And you can specifically with this missile pick out that target. So I think they were possibly testing its ability to take out these drones.
Yeah.
With the idea that, hey, we can do testing live, you know, while we're out and about, with the Houthis or whoever else. And this drone that the images of is somewhat exclusive to the Houthis. You won't be able to Google Lens this and find, some manufacturer somewhere that makes that drone. That drone is purchased. The top part of the drone, which is the second picture I sent you,
yeah,
is the drone itself. And then they modify it to do that, to put, the legs on, or not the legs on, but the go between the legs and then the round ring at the bottom.
Yeah.
And so as the drone gets hit by the Hellfire or whatever missile it was, and the missile bounced off because it doesn't have a proximity sensor. It's basically a gravity switch that would cause it to explode. And it wasn't enough to cause it to explode. So the missile weighs a little over 100 pounds, and the drone probably weighs 30 pounds, somewhere in that range, with the batteries in it. And you have a 100 pound object hitting a 30 pound object.
Yeah.
The math is there, and it makes sense that it would bounce off that ring, especially the ring being flexible. And that's kind of might explain the weird imagery that we see after the fact with the three objects flying through the air. And then that ring that's kind of like warping, in and out of, existence, so to speak. If you look at it, it's kind of interesting, but, it makes sense. And I looked at some other Hellfire videos of them hitting objects such as this, or objects that were on towers, and it's a little different because they don't have a lot of experience, shooting air targets, but they do it. And it's a much easier, faster missile to get on board a plane than a drone than anything else.
It's famously one of my favorite movie quotes ever is from Iron Eagle after he rescues his father and drops the big bomb of napalm, and he's like, Dad, can a Hellfire fire for Star on the ground? Because it's of course supposed to be a an air to surface platform at the time.
Yep.
So we didn't have the ones that were mounted on Jeeps and stuff like that. It's interesting to see these things. It's once again more interesting to me to see how we get these videos, where they get sourced from, and once again, how do they make it to us without these questions being asked, without even the concept of, hey, maybe we're using a different package platform for this, stuff like that. So
the video at the end there shows that object doing maneuvers, and nothing out of the ordinary. It's nothing that was like mind-bending physics or anything.
Yeah,
but it was making maneuvers, which some people said, well, that looks like a bird. Others are saying, whatever. But you can tell by the way the object was hit, the objects that were trailing with it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it didn't stop dead in its tracks and fall into the water. It's not a balloon. There's a lot of theories out there that say it's a balloon, but it's my professional opinion that this is a drone, and I think it's that drone or something very close to the image that I showed, and it ticks all the boxes. The drone is there.
And I've even heard the hypothesis that it is a targeting, a drag target being towed behind a plane for testing.
They won't do that because of the snapback. If it was dragged, because those wires would snap back. But I can see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But imagine like a KC-135.
Yeah.
Someone coming up and attacking the little cone for fuel. Yeah.
Yes.
And they're like, I have a problem. I tried it with my drone before.
I want to thank you for coming on as always, Mike. Sure. It's great breaking these things down with you and getting into some of the forensic video behind this stuff, because once again, it's the idea of the dialogue, the conversation. Are we being led somewhere? I'm not going to say that we aren't by alphabet agencies and contractors thereof. However, I once again think that this is a hugely important conversation to be going on in the halls of Congress, and that we as a community need to give it its credence. We need to make sure that these things happen, whether or not they happen to the extent that we want them to happen. Hey, we'll get there. Right now, it's just about making them happen. Can we just make tiny ones happen? Because if we can make ripples, we can turn those ripples into waves. But we got to make ripples first.
You got to do it, and you got to keep pushing forward, even though there's been several, some disappointments here and there down the road where we didn't get the disclosure that we were hoping for. We know there's extra life out there. We know extraterrestrials exist.
Drake equation tells
everybody
us
everybody I know, they all believe it. But I'm going to find them.
Always great having you on, man. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to keep up with 5x5 News, where they can go to find everything that you're doing, where they can go to contact you, things like that.
When I don't have food poisoning, contact me through X is probably the primary platform where I actually get into the conversation part of it. YouTube is where you can see most of the videos, especially some of my past work with the Las Vegas shooting and some other things, including the UAP and the Lou Elizondo situations and have you. That would be the two primary. And then just remember 5x5 News, search for it online and see where it takes you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks as always for the time. I'm so glad you're feeling better, brother. You take care of yourself out there. Keep your head on a swivel in this mad, mad world. All right. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. Well, you are online checking out everything from 5x5 News and Mike Turber on X, as well as his YouTube channel. Don't forget to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/videos is where you can find our videos page that has not only Mike's channel, as you can see down here, but all of our channel stuff, as well as the channels of all of our guests embedded. Also, that's where you can find that great playlist of all of the declassified government programs, programs and panels that happen directly from Congress. They're all embedded right there. So if you're having trouble finding unbranded stuff or things not from somebody else's YouTube channel, we always only post the original content from Congress and everybody, folks. So, of course, while you're online checking out CuriousRealm.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Research. That is where you can get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. That is also where you can report your encounter. We also have a great free tools page full of incredible free forensic tools that you can use online to examine your data, examine your images, your videos, to examine audio, all kinds of things. Thank you so much, everybody, as always, for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit GroundZeroPlus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.